Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie finally back in the booth. John, sorry, man, I've missed you.
Dude, at least we're both healthy-ish right now.
Yeah, yeah.
My voice is still a little extra manly, but I feel great compared to what I felt earlier this week.
We kind of go back and forth on who's sick, so let's just plan it out to where we're both sick at the same time next time.
Deal.
That way we can just have, like, sick episodes where we leave the coughing in, we leave the bad voice in. I don't know.
It's been a hard winter for you, man. Just lots of sickness. I was just sick for this week, and it was enough. So yeah. Bless your heart.
Finally, everybody feeling good, feeling really excited about today's case. Want to give a thank you to a new review that came in over on Apple Podcasts. This is from PTKM86, and actually signed it Kylie from Primetime Crime. Just found this podcast through the Or No collab, and so glad I did. I love their storytelling. They do a wonderful job. Can't wait to catch up. In case you missed us posting about that on social media, John, what was that collab about?
Yeah, Or No is a collaboration between a bunch of different podcasts to bring awareness to domestic violence. And also, we treated it as a fundraiser. So Every dime that this podcast makes is going to be given to victims of domestic violence through a partnership that we have. So it's an incredible series brought to you by great podcasters for an even better cause.
10 podcasters, 17 different stories. You can go look that up. Look up You Should Be Here, and then Or No is its own season in there.
Yeah, so it's a great, great collaboration. It was an honor to even be asked to be on it.
Go check all of those episodes out. New content over there. And again, some awesome stuff here today. This is one I've been wanting to talk about for quite some time.
Yeah, don't forget, at the end of this week, we will drop a new Patreon episode. So if you are a member, then just check out your feed. You're going to get some new content. If you're not a subscriber, it's never too late. $3 a month will get you access to bonus episodes each and every month and all of our content from the past. So Jamie's 7 years worth of content, I believe.
It's a lot. And a little teaser for this one. This episode's going to be Joseph Nasso, who was, we did the Alphabet Killer and A True Crime to Go recently. This is a potentially related case, and it's going to be only available on Patreon.
It is crazy. So with all that being said, man, this is an incredible case that we're covering today. So why don't you get the ball rolling?
Going back to the 1970s, there was a pamphlet that started circulating in medical centers at the University of Houston. It included lines like, "You say you're a virgin. Pregnancy is like dying. It's not real to most girls. Most college girls just don't believe it'll happen to them." This pamphlet was called Between Your Navel and Your Knees, and it started as a capstone project by a young lady named Nancy Crampton in her advanced sociology class, and she's going to be a focus of today's conversation. This will be printed more than 8,000 times and placed in university medical centers at a time when women's health was something that wasn't on the forefront of our minds or our tongues.
Do you remember when we were kids going to the doctors and they had all those pamphlets? Do you remember that?
I do. They were everywhere.
They don't have that now. Thank God. But they were, I mean, I remember learning lots of worldly wisdom from a pamphlet in a doctor's office.
Yeah. And the intentions of this one, obviously good. We're talking about healthy pregnancy and that kind of thing. She also founded the Population Awareness Committee on campus and passed out contraceptives while prodding administrators to give birth control services at the student clinic to anybody that wanted it. She's even credited with convincing administrators to hire the university's first gynecologist. This pamphlet is still available on campus today, so Nancy very much left her legacy on campus and showed her affinity for writing. Obviously, this is copywriting kind of stuff when she was in college.
Nancy was born in Wichita Falls, Texas in 1950. She was the youngest of three children born to Roger and Barbara Crompton. Roger and Barbara were both lawyers, and Barbara was the third woman to ever practice law in Wichita Falls. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm trying to register that through my head. So this was in the 40s, 50s, 60s. So, I mean, it tracks, I guess.
Yeah, so she was born in 1950, so practicing law probably in the early to mid-70s, I would imagine. Nancy went on to study economics at the University of Houston. After school, she worked in real estate and moved back to Wichita Falls, where she ended up marrying a traffic cop. And it was a short marriage, and when it was done, Nancy moved to Denver, Colorado. Hey, we're going to be there soon.
CrimeCon.
This year, this September. So all the while, Nancy continued to write stories and hone her storytelling skills. Then in 1991, Nancy moved to Portland, where she enrolled in a culinary school, and that's where she would meet her new husband, Dan Brophy.
Dan got his start by washing dishes in a kitchen in Kansas City. So classic superhero origin story. He was an extremely accomplished man. He was an amazing chef with a degree in marine biology, which are very unrelated issues, unless I guess he's cooking marine life. He was also a beekeeper, a master gardener, a mushroom forager, and found time to keep up with the latest cooking trends. In a video for the Oregon Culinary Institute, he said, "I'm always looking to learn new ingredients, new techniques, and new cuisines." He loved teaching others and often took his culinary students on field trips to learn more about where the foods came from and how they were made and prepared. Dan would come across sometimes as gruff because he had a very dry sense of humor, but Nancy found that endearing. She started out as a student of his, but like you said, John, they ended up getting married. Dan's son from a previous marriage, whose name was Nathaniel Stillwater, said, "One of the great things about their relationship was that he had the freedom to pursue his hobbies and interests. You know, she was very involved with her writing, and I think that coalesced nicely, you know, into being able to make it out to the forest and hunt mushrooms or work on whatever project he had." Nathaniel said the two also enjoyed being grandparents. They ran a catering business together that was pretty successful, and Nancy was a self-published romance novel writer, often crime-type romance, deadly romance. Her abilities are up to people's judgment, but she did publish several novels and on the side sold life insurance.
Isn't that the plot of a good romantic novel itself?
Yeah.
That there's a woman who writes romance novels who also sells life insurance
policies? This is some Inception stuff, because we're talking about a romantic crime story and one of our characters writes romantic crime stories. So if somebody did a story about our podcast doing a story about her who wrote these stories, then
that's very meta.
It's like a Russian nest egg.
All of the happiness of that marriage, if there was any, came to an end on the morning of June 2nd, 2018. And that's when 63-year-old Dan went to work at Portland's Oregon Culinary Institute. So he entered the institute and turned off the alarm at 7:22 a.m. So he started his day by getting the ice water and the coffee ready for his incoming students. And while he was doing that, in the middle of his chore, he was shot in the back while standing at the sink. He was shot a second time in his chest, so he was just left laying there. Unfortunately, that meant that students would arrive soon after to find his dead body in the kitchen. This is a terrible way to start Dan's day, but, I mean, could you imagine being a student walking into your college class and finding your professor laying there?
I mean, obviously the trauma of seeing a dead body, seeing somebody that had been shot, but then also the fear of where is this person and are they still armed?
Yeah. Are you the next potential victim? Obviously this was a clear homicide. So an autopsy showed that the second shot, the one that took place hitting him in the chest, was done at very close range while he was laying on the floor of the kitchen. And even the autopsy showed that this was not, he was already dead when this shot occurred, so it didn't necessarily need to happen in order for it to have killed him. They also discovered that he was likely shot with a Glock pistol. Dan's wallet with his credit cards and about $70 cash were left behind, so nothing appeared to have been taken, So that made the Portland Police Bureau detective Dorson Posey think that someone just wanted to execute this person. Investigators also found two 9mm shell casings at the scene, and they wondered if this was a disgruntled student who became the shooter, but soon their suspicions turned to Nancy. So when they talked to her, Nancy told the investigators, quote, "Here's the terrible thing. Even if you find who shot him, it's not going to bring him back. And that's what I want. I want him back." And the part that, or she said, "I don't care about who shot him. I just want him back." So she would say that multiple times.
Yeah. And we, I don't know. We talk about how hard it is to judge people when they're in these situations and whether what they say makes them look potentially guilty of something. So I have a hard time faulting somebody for pretty much anything they say here. So I'm willing to let that slide. Nancy's story about the morning went like this. Said that she talked to Dan briefly when she woke up before he headed out. She went and walked the dogs. She took a shower. But investigators found some traffic camera footage that showed Nancy in her vehicle driving to and then leaving the culinary school during about a 13-minute window when they believed the murder had happened. Nancy said she was probably just on a coffee run. She forgot to tell them about that because it was such a stressful day. But she had just been in the vicinity. She didn't go to the culinary school. But obviously this raised red flags for the investigators and also for the public. She grew a lot more infamous and got a lot of attention from this. And then they found a short essay that she had written 7 years earlier, so in 2011, called "How to Murder Your Husband." John, I know we talk about evidence being found for things you wrote after or Google searches, but to write a how-to guide about something you're accused of 7 years before, that's what I call premeditation, my friend.
Something that's on your mind for sure, right?
In it, she lists five motives for murder: financial, if somebody's lying and cheating, falling in love with somebody else, being abused, or being a professionally hired killer, which probably the less likely, right? She also mentions several different methods for killing somebody, including knives, a garrote, which is a way to strangle somebody. We talked about that often. Poison, using heavy equipment, or hiring a lover or hiring a hitman. When discussing all of these things, she also talked about the use of guns, and she described this as a loud, messy way to kill somebody that requires some skill. If it takes 10 seconds for the sucker to die, either you have terrible aim or he's on drugs.
Okay. There's a pill for gunshots now?
I don't know.
I don't follow that logic.
I think this goes back to judging whether she's a good writer or not, and that it's not a great sample, I don't believe.
Fair enough. To be also fair, I'm not going to buy or read any of her books.
Nope.
The senior deputy district attorney, Sean Overstreet, would go on to say, "We are all shocked, and then especially after reading and kind of going, oh my gosh, she kind of followed her own plan," end quote. Nancy was arrested and charged with second-degree murder in September of 2018. And we like to say that America has a swift legal process, but we all know that's a sham. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, her trial did not begin until April of 2022. That's a long, long time.
It really is. And I don't know. I know the pandemic shut things down for pretty much a whole year, but that's 4 years to get the trial going. It's a lot.
I would think that they could have had this wrapped up before COVID was even a thing. But
seems fairly open and shut on the surface.
So they were not able to use the book How to Murder Your Husband at trial, but they did allude to it by quoting its themes without mentioning it by name. They also laid out other key evidence against Nancy. So the prosecution began by laying out a motive, and it was very simple: life insurance money. They showed that Nancy and Dan were actually struggling financially, and he had a life insurance policy that totaled $1.4 million.
That would solve a lot of financial problems.
I think my wife loves me. I think your wife loves you. I think they would both kill us for $1.4 million.
Not the worst idea they've had.
No. Now, with him gone, Nancy would be able to be the sole owner of their home, which was valued at around $300,000. Records showed that Nancy had actually been skipping mortgage payments in order to make Dan's life insurance payments.
That's a choice right there.
Yeah, I mean, just think about that for a little bit. Like, if she wasn't found guilty of murder or, you know, allegedly going through trial for the murder of her husband, she's choosing to potentially forfeit her house in order to fund something that may not happen, which is his untimely death.
Right.
It's a gamble that is not logical. The district attorney would go on to say Nancy wanted more. Nancy wanted the lifestyle that Dan couldn't give her. And so I think she thought, if I could do this, I'll get enough money that will allow me to change that lifestyle. And because Dan doesn't want to go on that ride with me, he doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid theory based on what we know about Nancy. And we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about the physical evidence. And could she really have gone and shot him? And where's the Glock? We'll be right back. The strategy of the prosecution was to point out that Nancy was untrustworthy, going over and over her different versions of the story of what happened the morning of Dan's murder and how it changed so much. So nothing she said could be believed, or so the prosecution would say. They told the jury that Dan was shot by two bullets from a Glock pistol. It turns out that they found out that Nancy had purchased a blank kit of parts from the internet, including a slide and a barrel for a Glock pistol. John, I know people that have assembled their own firearms. None of them are old author ladies.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you're not familiar with pistols, a Glock can be completely taken apart and reassembled, and people will often customize them by adding, you know, aftermarket slides and different things to really customize it. So this is something that can be done, but why her?
Well, they did find a search run on her computer back in 2017 when she searched for ghost guns. So she's looking for weapons that are not able to be traced. You can buy them online, assemble them at home, discard them, and nobody's ever going to know what weapon was used in a particular crime. She had spent nearly $15,000 and firearms and related firearm parts.
Just for the record, a brand new Glock is about $500, $500 to $700. You're paying for the convenience of being able to murder someone.
Yes. You're paying for, hopefully, or she hoped, lack of traceability and nobody being able to find out what she was getting. So she got the parts for a full ghost gun in 2018. The prosecution theorized that Nancy had bought this Glock. She got the barrel online, attached it to another Glock pistol that she had bought at a gun show. So she's making like a Frankenstein pistol here, which, again, Glocks are made to do that. So it's not uncommon, but her motivation certainly doesn't track as being positive.
Now, the defense team would say that these purchases were made with Dan's support. They said that Nancy was researching gun components for research that she was conducting for a new novel involving a woman who carefully acquired gun parts. I think that if you find the website that you can do this, doesn't your research technically end there? Like, if you find a way in which it can be done, there's really no need to go ahead and buy it, I would
think. Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But
especially when you're already having financial problems and that's $15,000.
Yeah, I've never killed anybody, so that logic doesn't track with me.
She said that she gave the gun that she bought to Dan to protect himself while he was out looking for mushrooms. He enjoyed doing that on the side and would use it to cook. And, you know, it was like his quiet time. But the life insurance motive, Nancy said that in particular was ridiculous. She testified that she would do better if Dan was still alive because they were about to cash out their retirement plans and sell their home in order to downsize their lifestyle. something I hope I'm able to do if my wife doesn't kill me. But what about her changing accounts of the morning? Well, they had a convenient way to overcome that obstacle. Nancy maintained that she had no memory of the trip. The defense called a psychologist to testify that Nancy was suffering from retrograde amnesia that was induced by the trauma of her husband being murdered. I wonder how much they had to pay that expert witness, but Nancy took the stand and insisted that she would never kill her husband. She said, "I did not shoot my husband, and I don't know how to even defend myself." The defense rested their case, speculating that Dan's murder was simply a robbery gone wrong. Again, they stole nothing off of his body.
Keep in mind, there was no robbery at all. And, you know, I'm not a psychologist. We deal in these cases quite a bit. We talked about the Justin Vaughn case a couple of weeks ago and how he claimed to have no memory of what happened in the truck when his wife and kids were killed. So
my kids also get this retrograde amnesia when they do something wrong.
Yeah.
Because I'll be like, "Hey, why did you do this?" "I don't know. I don't remember doing that."
Yeah.
"No, you just got caught in a lie." And this is the oldest defense in the book. Yeah. Deny, deny, deny.
"Our security camera saw you throwing the flower pot in the driveway."
That is a oddly specific example.
There's a lot going on at my house.
What happened to the flower pot that used to be in your driveway?
I can tell you. But the jury did not buy anything the defense was trying to sell. It did take them 8 hours to deliberate, and they convicted Nancy Crampton Brophy of second-degree murder. She was given a life sentence on June 14th of 2022, and she's not going to be eligible for parole until she's 91 years old, if she makes it that long. This is 2025, so this year she turned 75. She's appealing her life sentence, saying in part that she should not have been allowed to answer a line of questioning that referred to her 2011 essay. Remember, it was How to Kill Your Husband, and it wasn't allowed in trial, but when she was on the stand, it did come up. She's currently serving her sentence in the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, Oregon. That sounds like, I don't know, a hipster town, not a prison.
I want to take a dive in Coffee Creek.
Go hang out at Coffee Creek. Yeah, it doesn't sound like a prison as much. John, second-degree murder. She had been Googling ghost guns for well over a year. If that's not premeditation, what is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could make the argument that she was doing this as research. Well, I don't know. Maybe her research led her down a path that would also be a convenient way to murder her husband. I think you could argue that either one of those could be premeditation.
Good point.
One doesn't have to precede the other. So this story of her murdering her husband actually was featured in a podcast brought to you by Wondery, and it was called Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy. It was also on an episode of Dateline and inspired a 2023 Lifetime movie called How to Murder Your Husband, The Nancy Brophy Story. And it had an actress named Sybil Shepherd and an actor named Steve Guttenberg. So the Oregon Culinary Institute closed down soon after the murder because of a lack of enrollment during the COVID pandemic. And when it comes to his stepmother's conviction, Nathaniel, her stepson, would say, "It's definitely brought some modicum of closure. There was certainly a time where we were convinced that she would be acquitted, that there would be a very real threat to the safety of our family if that happened. That relief is priceless." He plans on scattering his father's ashes near a bed of mushrooms because he loved being in nature, and that was something that he thought his father would love very much.
Yeah, this is obviously a tragic story. The meta view of what actually happened here and her being an author, she was involved in all kinds of different groups that got together and did creative writing and would give each other feedback. And this is, murdering your lover was something that she spent so much time thinking about, planning out. And when you're writing, John, you and I have done some fiction writing with Left on Dead. You have to combine intrigue with reality, and you have to plan things that are that are possible that people can visualize. So she's been doing this for so long, and you're right. Where's the line between this is just what she does and premeditation? I don't really know.
Yeah, it's just insane. Like, if you're not happy, just leave. You don't have to murder someone. But I think at the bottom of it, you know, the very base layer is greed, envy. You want a lifestyle that you physically can't afford. You're not super happy in your marriage. Well, you know what? By killing him, you get the best of both worlds. He's no longer there. You get the lifestyle that you want. So murder is a way to get what you want.
She has numerous novels available on Amazon. I am certainly not advocating for anybody to go buy those, but they are very much exactly what you would picture when you think of smutty romance and crime novels. She wrote a workbook for fictional writers, so she was serious about her writing, and it seems pretty obvious that she was in a bad place and decided to take that knowledge and put it to action. Between her having that kind of gun, buying the ghost gun, and her being on camera going to the scene, I don't know that it can get more definitive than that. We talked about reasonable doubt. Is there any doubt in your mind that she's the one that did this?
No, not for me. There's not. I think the police did a really, really good job, and they did a quick job too. They were able to find footage the same day of her making her way to the culinary school,
which is wild.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't, this is maybe the van. No, they saw the van clearly. They saw marks on the van that coincided with her van, and there was no one else driving it because it was in her driveway. It was just a slam dunk for the police and investigation team.
You know, I've pulled up a segment from her 2011 essay about how to kill your husband, and to go further into the motives, when she talks about a financial motive, she says, divorce is expensive, and do you really want to split your possessions? Or if you married for money, aren't you entitled to all of it? The drawback is the police aren't stupid. They're looking at you first. So you have to be organized, ruthless, and very clever. Husbands have disappeared from cruise ships before. Why not yours? Obviously, she didn't take him on a cruise ship. Maybe they couldn't afford to go on a cruise to get this done. But she had obviously been thinking deeply about this. So, are there other examples that we know of? I feel like we've covered law enforcement that have gone on to commit violent crimes, and obviously they know what investigations are like, and we see them trying to prep to get over or to get around the facts. But an author to do this really does feel like an episode of Murder, She Wrote or something. And for those too young to know what that is, it's, you don't need to go watch it. It's fine. Just move on.
Yeah. This was a crazy case, man. And then it seems like it would be a book in and of itself, but unfortunately it was real.
Yeah. We appreciate y'all hanging out with us. It's been, this story has been on my mind for a long time. And while I'm not a huge Lifetime movie fan, I'm a big Steve Guttenberg fan. So
when I said that name, I know the name, but I can't picture his face.
He was the main guy in Police Academy. He was in...
Oh, man. Love that guy. I knew him.
A Lady. Yeah.
Curly-haired guy?
Yeah.
Great. So, man, now that I know he's in it, yeah, I might watch it.
Sybil Shepherd as well. So that's...
Spoiler alert. He doesn't make it.
Oof. I don't know. He's not that old. How does he play somebody that old? I'm sure it's dramatized because Sybil Shepherd looks nothing like Nancy Brophy. Let me just throw that out there. Do you know who Sybil Shepherd is?
No, I know someone in real life named Sybil, and I know that there is a Sybil on Downton Abbey.
I don't know what that means, but you do. So we are planning for CrimeCon. We don't have our discount code yet, but we will have it soon. So if you're interested in coming to CrimeCon, and just a brief bit about what that is, there are all your favorite podcasters, most of your favorite TV shows are going to be there, and they're going to have booths, be conducting interviews, be sharing stories, signing autographs, kissing babies, and leading interesting sessions.
The sessions are what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, I mean, John Walsh will show up. There are families of victims' families of former perpetrators that show up to talk about what their lives are like and what we can all learn from crimes to make sure they stop happening. It is a 3-day party of other people who like true crime, which if people look at you funny because you fall asleep watching Unsolved Mysteries or something,
this is
the place for you. These are your people. And we'll be there with a booth and would love to meet anybody that's listening to us and to give you a discount to get there. We'll have that code available shortly. So stay tuned to our social media.
Sorry to cut. It's in Denver. Like, I'm just excited to be in Denver for a few days.
Denver is absolutely delightful in every way. And we can't wait to head that way, but stay tuned to our social media over at True Crime Cast on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. So you can find us over there.
Yep. Guys, we appreciate you. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.